Welcome to Episode 9 of Bibliotech, the podcast about emerging technologies for academics. This podcast is brought to you by University Affairs Magazine. My name is Rochelle Mazar, and I'm an Emerging Technologies Librarian at the University of Toronto, Mississauga. Every month, you can listen in as I talk about what's new in technology and what we as academics should be paying attention to. It's hard to keep up with all the new software, tools, and gadgets. That's where I come in. If you teach a class, you inevitably have to maintain a course website. Posting assignments, notes, and office hours is helpful to students, but you could do so much more. In this episode, I'll tell you about five things you can do to make life easier for you and for your students. No need to stay up until 2 a.m. every night banging out HTML code. These modifications are so simple, you'll wonder why you didn't do them last year. Hey, where do you want to go today? Society of technology will take you anywhere. It takes you to amazing places. It can bring you up. It might bring you down. Putting a course website together is something instructors are infrequently excited to do, and it's a rare instructor who experiments with all the tools available. It's become standard practice to have a course website, usually through something like Blackboard, Desire2Learn, Sakai, or Moodle, but most instructors do the bare minimum. Upload a syllabus, add some readings, make a few announcements welcoming students to the course and describing the textbook, and that's about it. We usually think of course websites, and courseware generally, as things instructors rely on in order to manage the administrative side of teaching. But course websites and course-related web tools are also things students rely on in order to stay on top of their work and do the best they can. There are five things you can do using courseware tools that will, I guarantee, make your course easier for you and for your students. Try them and see. Your students will thank you, and you will thank yourself for giving them a shot. First, stop answering email. That seems counterintuitive, I realize. Students send instructors an avalanche of email. If you've ever taught an introductory course with more than 200 students in it, you know what I'm talking about. I suggest you stop answering that email, because email is the least efficient way to deal with those questions. Students don't really prefer email as a communication medium. It's formal and stodgy, and it's no longer the favorite of most citizens of the internet. At my institution, getting students to frequently check their email is a challenge, but paradoxically, instructors are flooded with email questions from students. Why does this happen? It's because students have a ton of questions, and they like to get the answers directly from the source, but they only see three means of doing that. Calling your office and asking, which is perhaps the least likely thing an undergraduate student will do, ask you in person, which is only slightly less intimidating than calling your office, particularly for first-year students, and email. Email is still fairly formal, but it's vastly less intimidating than the other two options they have available to them. So they will email you. A lot. You can alter this whole scenario by providing a dedicated space inside your course website using a discussion board tool. All the courseware systems have one. Set up a discussion board, or if you have to, a discussion thread, called something like Questions About the Course. Tell students on the first day that this is where they should ask their questions, and you will only answer them there. If questions about the course come to you via email, you will not answer them. The only email they should send you is anything personal or medical they need to discuss with you. Otherwise, onto the discussion board. The advantage of this is that students will be, in effect, creating their own frequently asked questions system, and you'll only need to answer each question once. Every other student with that question will get their answer without emailing you or posting the question anew. Set a time in your schedule to answer those questions. Look at your calendar and see what times and dates work best for you. At the beginning of the term, you will probably need to do this daily. Don't try to just blend this task in with other work. It needs dedicated time for your own sanity. This way, students have an informal place to ask questions that gets them the answers they want, and they could do some self-serve from responses written by the source of all definitive knowledge. That's you. And your inbox stays quiet and peaceful. The second thing you can do to improve your course website is really just cutting your students a bit of a break. Use the tools available to let students talk amongst themselves. This is actually a decision you need to make because students are by default relatively powerless inside of courseware until you enable the tools for their use. The easiest way to let students ask each other questions is to set up a discussion board or a discussion thread. Some instructors are intimidated by this prospect. Students talking to students sends up all kinds of red flags. What if they're offensive or inappropriate? What if they use it to cheat? Normally, the kinds of questions students want to ask each other are things like, can I borrow someone's notes? Or does anyone want to get together to study? Or does anyone want to share a textbook? Things like that. For the most part, students are aware of the fact that you can see everything they post, so incidents of inappropriate posting is, in my experience, fairly infrequent. At my school, in the last 6 years, as an administrator of 2 different courseware systems for a total of about 11,000 students, I've seen exactly 1 incident. Don't let relatively minor risks prevent you from doing something that will greatly improve your students' experience of your course. There are ways to mitigate the risks of an open discussion board or discussion thread for students. Pay close attention to the settings of your discussion board. Most systems give you the option of allowing anonymous posts. Do not tick that box. I know many people feel it's important to let students ask so-called stupid questions anonymously, but I think allowing the option just underscores the feeling that most questions are in fact stupid. Problems with discussion boards arise when anonymity is possible. Remove the possibility. Don't allow students to delete posts. If someone is on a rampage and posts a drive-by offensive screed in your discussion board, you want the evidence, not just hearsay. Since everything in your discussion board should be tied to a university-sanctioned ID for which students are responsible, dealing with the problem afterwards is less complicated than you might think. You can forward the issue on to whomever it is at your institution that deals with academic offenses. These things can happen, but they're actually quite rare. The fact that they can technically happen shouldn't stop you from giving students the ability to connect with one another for perfectly valid reasons. Those perfectly valid reasons and discussions will be the norm, not drive-by ranting. As one final risk mitigating action, scan over the discussion board or thread about once a week or so, or have a TA do it. Again, book the time to do this in your calendar. You don't need to engage there or answer questions, but if you're concerned about cheating or inappropriate discussions, you'll be able to see and track activity there. It will likely just ease your mind to see what kinds of discussions go on.
Hey, where do you want to go today? Computerized people will never do you any harm.
The third thing you can do with courseware, talk to your students. Do you keep office hours? Do your students use them, or do you sit in your office with your door open and listen to the crickets? Most undergraduate students find office hours intimidating and awkward. They're unlikely to initiate discussions with a TA or with you unless they have a burning, critical, grade-related question, which is usually more practical than intellectual. If you want to encourage open discussion of course material with students, and you want to make yourself easily and readily available in controllable bursts, try keeping office hours online. Most courseware packages have an online chat function. Use it. Invite students to chat with you at specific set times, just like regular office hours. Start them on time and finish them on time. You're not required to stick around after the time's up. At my school, most students commute, so the drive or the long bus trip in to spend 5 or 10 minutes in an office asking a question isn't the greatest use of their time. But online discussions are easy to join and less intimidating to contribute to. One great idea is to set up an online chat right before a test or an assignment is due. One of the instructors I know does that and regularly gets 60 or 70 students in a chat with really good questions. Everyone gets to communicate, and everybody gets to keep their slippers on. It's win-win. Fourth, do not, I repeat, do not accept essays or other assignments via email. Email is really not the best tool for assignment submission, and here's why. You have a quota on your email system. It may be a very high quota, but if you have a large class, you are increasingly likely to hit that quota. You are not required to store all student work in your email quota. Most schools have other tools for that purpose. Additionally, having students send assignments by email means the only way they can be sure they successfully submitted it and that it was received is by you emailing them back and telling them so. Do you email each student as they submit their assignment? A Dropbox structure, a standard feature in most courseware systems, gives the student an automatic receipt. The student then has the ability to verify that their assignment was properly submitted. This is something we recommend all students do, and you can require it. Put it in your syllabus. Here's how you verify your assignment was submitted, you can say. If you cannot verify it, you need to mention it immediately. If you don't know grade, simple. Email can get so complicated. They say, but I sent it, didn't you get it? It's way too easy for things to go missing, get filed in the junk folder, or get sent to trash, or whatever else. Don't risk it. Keep your inbox clear. Keep assignments where they belong, in a Dropbox, digital or otherwise. It's easier for you, and it's easier for them. Peace will reign. Fifth, and finally, possibly the most important thing you can do to make your course easier and more intuitive for everyone, rename the default content areas. This seems like a really small thing, but its impact is huge. It's the single most common request students make of instructors. Just rename the folders. Most courseware systems come with empty folders ready for your syllabus, readings, and other documents. You might see them as links on the left-hand side of your course website. That area is usually called a course menu. The folders there are usually called things like course documents, or content, or course information, or something generic like that. These are meant to be defaults, something to give you a clue about what you might use them for. They aren't meant to dictate what content you can put where. They're only there to give you hints about how you might consider organizing your course. Unfortunately, the vast majority of instructors never change the default names of these folders or add any that suit the nature of the course. They get pinned inside a generic structure and feel entirely hemmed in by it. The truth is, you can rename these folders, add more of them, and delete them if you like. It's just that almost no one does. Many instructors think they have to stick with these default names because they're somehow required to, or because students will be confused if they don't. Nothing could be further from the truth. Think of that little list of folders as your course's table of contents. Sure, most books have a title and an appendix, but the chapter titles are unique. Having descriptive chapter titles doesn't confuse your reader, it helps them. Many instructors think they have to stick with these default names because they're somehow required to, or because students will be confused if they don't. Nothing could be further from the truth. Think of that little list of folders as your course's table of contents. Sure, most books have an introduction and an appendix, but chapter titles are unique. Having descriptive chapter titles doesn't confuse the reader, it helps them. The names of those folders should reflect the content of your course and the language you use in class. You can arrange your course menu by theme, or by week, or cluster of weeks, or by the kinds of documents you post. That list of folders should give students a sense of what's going to happen in the course, what's important, and what's to come, and shouldn't make you feel hemmed in any way. Students will be much happier to see your folder called Slides and Notes than look at course documents and wonder what's in there. You don't need to be a technical genius to have a rich, functioning, and powerful website. The tools are all there for you. It's a matter of carefully and thoughtfully switching them on. That's That's it for this episode. How do you organize your course website? Send me your ideas by posting a comment at the bottom of this podcast page at universityaffairs.ca. Until next time, I'm Rochelle Mazar.